Welcome back to the Latino Newsletter podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Zacarias, and our guest today is Nicole Foy, an investigative reporter who has spent her career uncovering injustices affecting Latino and immigrant communities, from labor abuses and housing inequities to the systemic gaps that keep families from being heard. Nicole was formerly the Central Valley reporter for the California Divide team at Cal Matters. She was a 2020 Community Impact Fellow for Stanford University's John S. Knight Journalism Fellowship Program, and she is the co-founder of Voices Internship of Idaho. Her reporting has taken her deep into rural towns, border communities, and state houses. We'll talk today about her journey into investigative journalism and what drives her storytelling approach. Thank you so much for being here with us, Nicole.
Thank you for having me. That's such a nice intro.
Well, let's get into it. You are a ProPublica reporter, and you published a scathing investigative piece titled, "We Found That More Than 170 U.S. Citizens Have Been Held by Immigration Agents. They've been kicked, dragged, and detained for days." So talk me through this. What drew you to this story? How did the idea of pitching a story around American citizens being detained first come to fruition?
So it's kind of a couple of different levels to this. First, as I've been tracking U.S. citizens being detained since Trump took office. I wrote like one or two stories back in March and April about the few reports that we'd heard, a couple of people that I'd talked to who had been detained, and mostly looking at what happened during the first Trump administration, but also just like, this is a long issue that the United States has had. Every time that we have made immigration enforcement a very intense priority and thrown a lot of resources at it, we have then detained and deported many U.S. citizens. So it's not a unique problem. And experts were warning that, like, when the system already has this problem, where if you're trying to deport large numbers of people, citizens get caught up in this. It already has this problem, but they are warning that everything that the Trump administration was doing, guardrails that were being taken off, was only going to make this a bigger problem this year, even compared to his first term. I especially noticed it when we were working on a story about immigration agents breaking car windows in order to increase arrests of people. And so many of the people, like in some of these most horrific videos and cases that we reported out, were citizens, whether they were the target, the mistaken target of the of this arrest, or whether they were just kind of like bystanders who were in the car with their husband, with their uncle, or U.S. citizen kids in the car while their father is arrested. And it was actually my editor who was like, "You've got to do an update." And I was like, "We already wrote about this. Nobody cared, you know?" And he was just like, I think people might care now. Like, there's a lot. Like, your list has a lot of people. And so I have to give him credit for that. But there's been really, really good reporting around the country. And similar to, like, what my focus was when we wrote about ICE breaking car windows to arrest people, was just that, like, we knew that people were seeing, specific cases, and, like, they had heard about one or two people, whether it was because it was in their community or their local paper, local news, or had been focusing very intently on what was happening, or they'd seen a really horrific video, but they may not have realized the vast scope of it. And especially they may not have realized that, like, you know, there was tons of coverage of how many U.S. citizens were arrested in the Los Angeles area, but people maybe thought it was just happening in L.A. and just during the summer when there was a very heavy enforcement. And we wanted to kind of dispel that notion that it was only happening in certain parts of the country, and that we were really seeing the consequences of what happens when a promised intense immigration enforcement push goes out across the country into American communities in ways that we have not seen them do for decades.
You know, the point that you made that hits so close to home for me is like sometimes you write about these really important issues and you're like, nobody cares. I'm just reporting this out into the abyss. But like, obviously, in this case, people did really care about this. I've seen this report cited everywhere, you know, and I know, you know, as a reporter, we can only really put out what we have hard evidence for, what we can substantiate, what claims we have based on evidence. So I'm wondering, you know, with this number that you guys reported, do you feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg in some ways?
Yeah, I think so. With the number that's, you know, in my story, you know, at least 170, more than 170, honestly, Americans being detained, it is a vast undercount. First, that count only goes for the first 9 months of the year through October 5th. I feel like the second I published this story, it just suddenly there were way more cases coming out of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so, you know, interesting that you bring up Chicago, because I feel like in terms of documentation, Chicago, which is my hometown, one of the most effective cities in terms of like documenting a lot of these incidences. And I know that journalists, local journalists out there have really mobilized and come together to try and create sort of like a cohesive network of documentation. What your reporting has shown a lot of people is that these cases of documentation are important. They do matter. They do make a difference. And especially now as we're seeing like the federal judge out there in Illinois kind of coming down on DHS, on Border Patrol, just on immigration enforcement and federal invasion of the cities. As we know, with all of this evidence and reporting that you have, there are still agents in the Trump administration that are denying these claims. How do you reconcile with the amount of misinformation coming out of this administration right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of flat denial is a pretty accurate representation of what I've been receiving from the administration on this topic. On the big picture, at least when it comes to the last 9 months, they have either said very firmly, yeah, we're not arresting citizens. We would never deport a U.S. citizen. Any claims to that are false. And I've said, well, you would be the first administration to never arrest a U.S. citizen. Like, this is not like this unrealistic thing you're refusing to admit to. But then they immediately follow up with saying, we will prosecute any U.S. citizen, anyone who obstructs and interferes with immigration operations. And in many cases, like, yeah, I think it's very interesting, because on the one hand, like, that's their blanket statement. But they have acknowledged that many of these people that they have arrested that are caught on camera, they've responded to individual cases for other local media when they've reported it and said, like, usually with some type of disclaimer of, well, they were arrested because they were throwing a rock at law enforcement. They were, you know, but they've acknowledged that they have arrested these people. But of course, I think their definition of arrest or being held in generally difference, generally like differs from the public's understanding. The way we counted it was simply like, were you held against your will? Right. Were you held at gunpoint, prevented from leaving an area, or handcuffed for any amount of time? So that was just kind of like our hard line. And you know, someone held in handcuffs for a couple of hours in the back of a van while they're driven around the city, which is something that happened with some of these people. DHS may not be recording that as an arrest. I have no visibility into that. I think that is maybe not what the like average person's understanding. Like, I don't think they would agree. I think they would very much consider that person held against their will and not able to leave. Right. But it gets much worse too for people who have been documented as spending days in federal detention along with immigrants who are kept in these similar conditions. And without access to a lawyer, sometimes without access to even a phone call to let family members know where they are, without access to sufficient water and food or medical attention. The facts of their experiences being held for days in these areas is not something that the government has ever disputed. They've just had a reason for it. They've said, for example, I'm thinking specifically of George Bretthis, who was kind of caught in a protest in Camarillo, California, where they said they didn't deny that he was really like just disappeared for several days. His family had no idea where he was. They literally like were pleading on local news, asking people for help to find him. They said, well, he became violent and, you know, was arrested for assault on an officer. That's that statement, which came, I'll note, like after months of George appearing on every single media possible, sharing his story relentlessly. That came months after it happened, and that was the first time that he ever learned what he was going to be charged with, because they did not tell him when he was arrested, did not tell him while he was in detention for 3 days, and did not tell him when they released him without charges.
Even reading through like the different testimonies in your report, first of all, just really amazing that you're able to get people to kind of open up and trust you with these really vulnerable stories and testimonies. I remember one of the things that you wrote about that stuck out to me was that there was, in your review of all of these cases, a number of children, right? Mm-hmm. Like there were very young individuals who were being detained, as well as a couple of cancer patients. And so, you know, just knowing what we know about the conditions of these detention centers, we know that those people are not being given access to their medical needs. I'm wondering for you, as you're documenting, as you're reaching out, how are you getting people to really like open up and trust you? Obviously, you have the name ProPublica behind you, but I don't think that necessarily every single person understands the, I guess, weight of that affiliation either.
I do want to note that I was not able to speak to every single person that we documented. This reporting was very much built on the backs of very strong local reporting around the country in ways that I have not seen before, a dedication from the public to film every single interaction with immigration agents, because people on the street are filming. They're filming what happens to their loved ones and their neighbors, and to just absolute strangers that they've never met before. And that is, that kind of documentation is really important, especially when we are dealing with a government that will very relentlessly put forth their own version of the facts, even sometimes when our own eyes tell us differently. And so having that documentation, having that evidence is incredibly helpful. Filing lawsuits is incredibly helpful. But yeah, I think just like to get back to your original question about like talking to people about these vulnerable moments, not everybody wants to talk about it, but some people, I think especially like of people like Leo, the young man in Alabama, like he works in construction. Like he's busy. Like whenever I text him, he'll be like, hey, I'm driving to Pensacola. Like I got a job. I'll call you back later. You know, like whenever I'm like checking something else, like he's busy. These people have their own lives. They're very often like really hardworking people who like this is not their, you know, the thing they thought they would be doing with their lives. But like someone like Leo has said, like, first of all, his decision to speak out, and he's you know, filed a lawsuit in Alabama. His decision to speak out is one for, honestly, for self-preservation. Like he's been stopped by immigration agents twice on the job. He sees no reason to believe why this would not just continue. And also too, I think they've often talked about just not wanting this to happen to other people. This was a horribly traumatic situation for, I just think specifically about like Leo and George, two young men on opposite sides of the country who went through deeply traumatic experiences and came out very determined that this should not happen to other people, and it certainly shouldn't happen to them again. You know, they were and also too, like, I think especially the case of Leo, like they had other consequences in their family. His undocumented brother, who was the reason why he started filming, this raid on his work site in Alabama in the first place, his undocumented brother was really violently arrested in front of him and deported. The claims that this is just to like fulfill a specific immigration agenda, that this is really just to go after the worst of the worst, is not bearing out in reality at all.
Yeah. And, you know, we know that is unequivocally false. And we also know that even if this were a situation where they were only targeting specific types of people, those people still have rights, right? Like they shouldn't be in what are essentially modern day concentration camps. I'm wondering, because we as journalists don't always get to see like the impact of our work, right? Sometimes we report and we hope it makes a difference, but the House and Senate Democrats announced like a joint investigation based on your reporting for oversight around, you know, detention of U.S. citizens. Have you ever seen this level of accountability in your previous or past reporting?
No, not really. This has been really overwhelming, honestly. but I think it's definitely like the best that you could hope for when you do a story like this, especially when like covering this administration and seeing, you know, so many reporters around the country write about the same issues over and over, and like people in different, completely disparate communities, you know, raising the same concerns. That's one of the things that I just wanted to do, which is like just put it all together and be like, the government is telling you one thing here in California and trying to pretend like it's unique, but they're also telling people the same thing in Chicago and in Texas and in Alabama. And it's like, either this is like, it stops being like just a bug in the system, and instead it's clearly the system, once you can put everything together and show that when you don't hold the line earlier on for due process rights for everyone, which is what is guaranteed under our Constitution, then inevitably everyone will feel the effects of government overreach and oversteps.
I'm wondering, you know, because you have been reporting on immigration for so long, what is the biggest shift in terms of your reporting from, say, like the Biden-Obama administration to Trump 1.0 to Biden, and then, you know, now?
I think one of the biggest changes that I've seen, which also directly leads into maybe why we're even seeing even more citizens being like held and detained by immigration officials, is that truly I don't remember this level of in the streets like resistance, like city by city, and people really, you know, trying to stop immigration officials from completing arrests in their community. I think that because one of the categories that we kind of just had like two big buckets for like the type of cases that we were looking at, where one is, you know, more than 50 citizens who they appeared to like they were detained or held because people questioned their citizenship. But there was actually a far larger group of more than 100 and around 130 citizens who were detained either at protests or just like amid raids, and they were accused of interfering and obstructing in some way. And I think that, again, that's one of the differences, and they're obviously very intertwined, because people would not be reacting this way if immigration officials were not entering our communities in these unprecedented ways. But I certainly, and you know, of course, like there's many, many, many of these cases where people have been accused of assault, of obstruction charges, and they've never been charged with it, or those charges and cases have been dropped. So like, you know, taking with a grain of salt those claims by the government. But I just think those two things are tied together. Like, one of the reasons why we're seeing citizens caught up in this immigration enforcement is not just because of like the system being built in a way where they're not where there is always allegations of racial profiling, and there are always people who get picked up mistakenly, but also there are just many people pushing back in the community as officers move into communities that do not want them there. Like, they just frankly do not want them there. And that ends up having consequences. Immigration officials can respond to that in ways other than arresting people for assault and obstruction, but that is often what they're doing.
I have been honestly very shocked by the amount of Latinos who are either like pro ICE or voted for Trump. And I do think there's been a little bit of a shift since the administration has gotten the ball rolling. But what are you seeing on your end in terms of consensus? Or have you been shocked by any of the responses you've received?
I don't think maybe shocked is the right word. I mean, we all know that many young Latinos are increasingly getting most of their news from podcasts, from YouTube, from social media, and those spaces are all far more hyperpartisan than more like traditional news outlets. And so that means that it can be very easy that if you are only getting your news from YouTube and you are pretty conservative, are supportive of this administration, you are never going to see any of the evidence of any abuses. Like, just genuine. That's the way that our algorithms are working, which is really terrifying, because there's nothing wrong with getting your news from these spaces. But what is really terrifying is how our social media algorithms will just kind of feed us these like self-fulfilling stuff that just feeds into what we want to see and what we want to think. And so I think that I haven't been super shocked by that because of that. But also, too, I think historically, ICE and Border Patrol in particular has been heavily Latino for a long time. So I guess it's just like it is just the reality. I think some of the responses that, again, I don't think I'm a very deeply cynical person. So I like some of the responses were something that I was honestly a worry that I had about putting a number on it was not just about like it was just I was worried because it's I know it's an undercount. I know it's only a snippet of what we know because of like responsibility to verify everything that we put out there. And also to just like genuinely, there's so many areas of I'm particularly familiar with areas in the South or in the Mountain West where there's not a lot of resources for immigrants and not a lot of news that is covering immigrants very well. And so these stories just get lost. But, I was worried about, and it was like kind of right on schedule. Like, I think there was a lot of silence from people after this story. And then it was immediately like 170. That's not bad. That's a great error rate. And I was like, okay. Like that's one of those responses where like, I have to say, like, I did assume that would be a response. And I was unfortunately proven correct.
It's interesting that the response has, you know, would be that as opposed to, oh my, that's 170 people. But, you know, like it's interesting because I always, whenever I put something out into the universe and I never know what the response is going to be and then the response happens, I feel like I have like mentally mm-hmm. somewhat prepared for it, but I always have like an initial visceral response. Like, how can people not get this? Or, you know, do you have those moments? Because like now your work is much more widespread because of the outlet that you're affiliated with. Would you say that like you feel much more like mm-hmm. like there's more eyeballs on you now?
I would say that something that makes me a really bad journalist is I really hate attention. Like I've wanted, like I'm finally emerging from like wanting to hide under a rock for several days just because, yeah, it's very overwhelming. I like being behind the scenes. I like letting my writing speak for itself. And I am in awe of people who like doing like TV hits for this story has been horrifying because it's just like, I'm not cut out for this. Like yeah, it's like I have to put makeup on. I'm used to like rolling up into a field somewhere in my jeans and my tennis shoes. Like, so it's very overwhelming, but I think it's good. I think it is obviously very good. And I think for me, all I wanted to do, because like I get frustrated when I am repeatedly told something and repeatedly have to quote something that has like from like the administration that I cover and it's my job to hold accountable, like just not true. Like it is not true that Americans have not been detained, like they say. Like, so it is really frustrating to have to just like quote that line over and over again, instead of like, honestly, getting like an involved substantive discussion that I have asked for multiple times with many of these officials, of just like, hey, look, like this is a problem that every administration has had. This is a problem that oversight agencies have told you that you should fix. And so you have been given advice for how to fix your systems, how to fix your approach, what these things that you're supposed to do. Can you just like explain to me what you're doing? And like the lack of interest in that is very frustrating, because it's just much easier for them to deny, honestly, reality. And that doesn't help. That doesn't help anyone. That doesn't help build any sort of trust. And like, I don't think it's good not to be able to trust our government institutions. I don't think it's good that, like, you know, there's always like, it's always my job to be a little bit skeptical of what they say, but it's not healthy to have two very different realities going forth, or for, you know, our elected officials to be telling us not to believe the things that we see with our very own eyes. So I think I am at least very grateful that it seems like this reporting has at least changed the conversation a little bit, so that like it is, you know, officials can keep saying what they want to say, but like everyone knows that at least this number of people have been detained.
You know, a lot of your reporting hits so close to home for me. Like, my mother was undocumented, but I was a childhood cancer survivor, and seeing the way in which, you know, she had to kind of bend over backwards to make sure I had just the bare minimum access to healthcare, and the sacrifices she made gave me so much perspective growing up, but also like made me aware that like these are not privileges that are being awarded to just everybody, right? So it's been so devastating to see the amount or the lack of care and empathy that's instilled on children, in a sense, right? And it doesn't mean that, like you said, anyone should be subjected to these conditions, but like these are children who don't really know why these things are happening to them. A lot of them are, you know, watching their parents get ripped away right in front of them. That's like trauma that they're going to have to carry with them throughout their lives. So it really, reading your report, seeing the documentation, the film that people capture, the videos people capture in real time, has been really heartbreaking. But, you know, I'm so appreciative of your work that you continue doing. I know it's personal and it's also data driven. So like, I love being able to kind of use it as both, like, hey, look at these numbers, but also like read these testimonies and stories. And I think that depth, that's the part that you can get into with investigative journalism. Like, that's the thing that makes it so powerful. Is that your preference? Do you prefer investigative journalism over the other types?
It's hard, because I this is actually my first like non-local job. I've never been a national reporter before. And so like, I love local journalism. I love being able to write an investigation about how ICE agents are using the local jail one day, and then writing about here's my list of favorite taco shops the next day. Like, that is like, I love that, because I think that those things go hand in hand, especially if you're trying to report on communities that have been like discounted or ignored. Like, you don't walk in anywhere and like you get handed the most traumatic stories. Like, you have to build trust, and sometimes building trust is showing that like communities are more than just their worst days. And so like, I miss that aspect of it a lot, definitely. But I think I am ultimately like very justice driven, and that I do not have the solutions for the world's problems, but I do know that like my kind of take is like, no one can come up with solutions unless they know the problems exist. And that's my role. I can land very solidly in that role. And I may get to see results or I may not, but at least I know that like I have contributed to bringing like things that were in the dark into the light, and pray that the rest gets sorted out by someone smarter than me.
that's kind of how I feel too. I'm like, all right, if I can gather this information, put it out into the universe, like maybe someone smarter than me can do something.
Yes, exactly. It's like, there's got to be someone better than me. Please.
I always thought it was so interesting. Some people are like scared to be the dumbest person in the room, because I'm always like trying to find people smarter mm-hmm. than me, better than, more skilled than me. Like, yeah. Let's bring our skills together. I mean, with that being said, I would love to leave you with the last word. Anything you'd like to say or share about your work that we should be looking out for?
There's just so much that I couldn't cover in this reporting. And there's so much that's happening in local communities. And like, I would just encourage people to like support local journalism. Honestly, I know that may be weird coming from a national, like support local journalism, because like literally most of these stories only occur because like people who live in these communities reported them first. Something that I think is still spooling out. And I definitely encourage like any listeners to go and check out this reporting. But like, you know, I run an internship program for students in Idaho. So I'm still very like close to news in Idaho. And there was a huge FBI ICE raid that kind of, you know, that I did not get included in my story because it happened after. But it resulted in dozens and dozens of US citizens, of children zip tied. There's really, really devastating local reporting about not just like what it's like, what it's been like for the children who lost parents after this raid, but the way that they were treated during this raid. That is really like, you know, there's one in particular that I think of this little boy talking about how they broke his car windows and he got glass in his mouth. And he's a US citizen who was attending a community like a community event at a local horse track. And everyone there was treated as if they were suspects. And I think that that's the kind of stuff that only happens when you have good, like you can only learn about these things happening when you have good journalism happening in our communities. And we would not know about this if we didn't have a ton of, in this case, Spanish-speaking journalists out in Idaho reporting on this. And so I just think like, you know, making sure that our community, our like newsrooms reflect our communities is incredibly important, and supporting these local newsrooms that do that. That is the only reason usually why we learn about any of these things that I think as Americans, we should be questioning why our government does them. So yeah, I think that's honestly my take is like support local news, that they're the only reason we know about any of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I work for a local news outlet, so I'm a big supporter of local news as well.
Yeah.
But the internship is Voices Internship of Idaho, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So definitely check that out for those who are listening, Voices Internship of Idaho. And I know you guys have brought in a lot of like young, early career journalists into the mix. So amazing. I love building the next generation of young writers and press. We need more.
Yay.
If you're interested in checking out more of Nicole Foy's investigative reporting, be sure to look her up at ProPublica.com. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on social media. I'm your host, Michelle Zacarias. Until next time.
This episode of the Latino Newsletter podcast was produced by Joaquin Kotler, Juan Diego Ramirez, and Michelle Zacarias. It was edited by Julio Ricardo Varela. Music by a cast of characters via Soundstripe. Season 2 of the Latino Newsletter podcast was made possible through individual donations and the Latino Media Consortium. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and hosts and don't necessarily reflect those of the Latino Newsletter or its staff.